don't have a lot of time.
Just surviving is the key.
Yes, surviving is the key, and that is what we're talking about here. Welcome to Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio on KBBF 89.1 FM. I am your host, Daniel Kerbine. We're here every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m., where we explore. First of all, we start tearing away the veils, see what is actually happening behind the messages that we're given by the big media, by the big conglomerates, by big government telling us the memes out there saying, oh yeah, there's no such thing as global warming, there's no such thing as climate change, there's no such thing as that we might be running out of oil and everything else, until finally we do, and climate change comes and clobbers us, and then it's nobody knows really what kind of story will be told then. And so this is a show that's all about, first of all, let's rip away the veils. Let's see what this what's really happening in our economics, in our economy, at the government level, and also at the ecological and environmental level, and in the world supply of the resources that it takes to have a growing economy. And what do we need to do to understand that we're not going to have a growing economy anymore? And what can we do as communities to make sure that we're prepared for everything that's coming forward? Now, one of the steps in that process, an important one, is to tear away the veils. That's step number one. And that brings us to some coverage that we've been giving here on Shift Shapers of the Occupy movement, the Occupy Wall Street movement. Because here's something where we have these global corporations, these large, gigantic corporations that really are only interested in, they're kind of psychopathic, that they only care about the profit and will do anything, will kill entire populations of people, will poison rivers just to make sure that profit is achieved. That's psychopathic, folks. And they're telling us that, hey, you know what? We're actually people like you. Our corporation is a person just like you. So the Occupy Wall Street movement is kind of shattering some of that PR and saying, look, folks, here's what's really happening. And I got a treat for you today. Here on Shift Shapers, I'm your host, Daniel Kerbine. And I have a guest here. He's been on KBBF once before yesterday morning with Evelina Molina on the Project Censored Hour, the community radio hour between 9 and noon, that she has been sending us all kinds of up-to-date information about what's happening here in our world, and the Spanish language version of Amy Goodman's Democracy Now. If you haven't heard it, definitely tune in 9 a.m. It'll be on again tomorrow and Friday. So yesterday, as Evelina's guest, who is today my guest, Michael Levitin, who is editor of the Occupy Wall Street Journal and who is very active with Occupy Wall Street. So without any further ado, we are going to have here Michael Levitin of the Occupy Wall Street Movement. Michael, do you hear me?
I hear you fine.
I'm going to turn you up a little bit here. So you were on Evelina's show yesterday on our station. And you were talking about, you are fluent in Spanish. One of the things that I learned, and as somebody who actually has been utilizing and getting exposure to the Spanish language here on a bilingual station, it always impresses me when I see somebody who has a command of the Spanish language like that, for whom Spanish is their second language. I want to give you kudos for that. And I understand that a lot of that practice you got was from some organizing work that you did in Bolivia.
It wasn't really organizing, but it was certainly honing the... Well, you know, I got my Spanish start here in Sonoma County at El Molino High School, freshman Spanish class, so it did start in pretty ordinary form for an American. But yeah, going down to South America after college, after UC Santa Cruz, and I arrived there really to get my Spanish better, and I was with my girlfriend then, and we were teaching English, and then the water war broke out in Bolivia. I kind of talked about that a little bit yesterday, maybe more
yes.
In Spanish. Yeah, and it was an opportunity. It was kind of being thrown, well, it wasn't thrown in the fire, it was thrown in the water, but really sort of, can you do this? And in those 5, 6, 7 months of a lot of drama down there, definitely using the language and reporting on it, and that's sort of where I started as a journalist, really writing for...
That's really amazing. That must have been an amazing...
I lived in Spain later on. And, other places. So.
That's fantastic. Michael Levitin is our guest, and he is involved, very involved, with Occupy Wall Street out of New York and is in Sonoma County temporarily taking care of some things. And that experience in Bolivia, I want to refer to that because this segment of our show is called Class Warfare, The Resistance Report. Our usual host for this session on our Shift Shapers team is Annabelle Asher, and she has a cold. She couldn't be here. Class Warfare, when you look at that meme, it's being used a lot, thrown around a lot. But what we found that it means is that there's a corporate class that has been taking away our commons, that has been taking away the public domain, the things that belong to the people, and privatizing it. And one of those is water. And in Bolivia, it got so bad that people couldn't even get water. And that's what the water war was about. Am I correct in that or close to it?
Pretty much is. Interesting for our listeners here, it happened to be our enormous San Francisco-based multinational corporation named Bechtel Corporation that was the privatizer of Bolivia's water. They struck a deal with Bolivia's water company and government and basically took over and treated it like any other piece of merchandise that they then tripled the price of. And you're talking about campesinos, you're talking about coca farmers, people who lived on, who still do live on, a fraction of what we would consider a livable wage. They are just getting by in quite, Bolivia is, I believe, still the poorest country in South America. And you just had this moment. It was just following the 99 Seattle battle in Seattle, where we had our own major outbreak of rage, really, against corporate control and the WTO. And this followed right up on that. It was 2000, but this was in the developing world. It was kind of the real thing. And people just had enough. And it was, I think, the opening salvo, in a way. We can see that water war in Bolivia is the opening moment of this now growing anti-corporate feeling, which now with Occupy has obviously a decade later reached a new stage of outrage.
That's it, isn't it? There were some people who early on, and that's what the Seattle thing was about, was it would have been easy to say as a general informational American to say, what's their beef all about? I mean, what are they so angry about? It's just some kind of treaty. And what they were foreseeing was that things would be privatized and things would be taken away from the people in a way that would be controlled. And then it started actually happening. And that's what you're saying, is that what was being protested and forecast in Seattle, you saw happening there in Bolivia. And where that got to was they got their water back. How is that going?
How is it going?
Yeah.
I haven't been back down in Bolivia in some years, since about 2002 or so. I think that the fact that they elected Evo Morales, who I actually interviewed about three times during that movement, because he was a coca farmer, he was a leader of them, but he was quite a modest character still during those really momentous days. But I think the fact that Bolivia elected the first indigenous leader in, you know, was it all in all of South America over the last 150
years? I think he was the first. Yeah.
I think kind of showed that this movement actually led to something and really did affect change. I think there are many critics of him, and obviously he's tried to nationalize, tried to show power against the U.S., which has not earned him friends on this side, and he's aligned himself with Chavez over time in Venezuela and made some decisions that, you know, have angered his own people in Santa Cruz, in the lowlands, the more moneyed elite. But, you know, who are we to judge our media? Our corporate media, which is partly what you're talking about as well, in terms of corporations, cannot be relied on to really give us accurate portrayals of what's really happening in countries like Bolivia. So how can we appear even be so sure of what we're speaking of?
Yeah, exactly. And the more clarity we can get in looking at that, the better. But what I want to leave people with here is that if you want to see a movie about this, it's a really well-done movie. It's called Even the Rain is the title of it. Even the Rain. What is that in Spanish? What is the title in Spanish?
También la lluvia.
También la lluvia. Excellent movie.
Yeah, Gael García Bernal.
Well worth checking out. And so anyway, I won't get into the plot of it. You'll be very entertained by it, and you'll be very informed by it. But getting to Occupy Wall Street, how has this grown for you, and where do you see it going?
Ooh, yeah. Those are one of those
two-way
questions that are, quite open-ended. Let us hope that it goes many, many places. I think, actually, it's beyond hope. I think it is. It's something that has started, and it's really hard to even know how to talk about exactly, because it's so new for so many of us. And I think people who certainly not me. I'm 35 years old, but my parents' generation and people who lived through the 60s can obviously look back and sort of try to see parallels or similarities of when an eruption like this happens. But I don't think we really have any direct parallel. I don't think we can compare what is occurring now and what potential it holds to anything really that we've seen, because of the enormity and because the scale to which corporate power in America has been consolidated and enlarged and fortified like a massive impenetrable kind of block of 1% and 1% of the 1% who really essentially have taken entire control of our government, our courts, our media, and virtually all consumer choices in our lives. It's reached this point at which who knows what precisely this is leading to,
right.
But people have had enough because they've tried to run average people's lives and communities over a cliff, and people are now finally really waking up to this in America and making a lot of noise.
It's actually galloping along. You know, when the crash, and this is a crash, when this crash at first occurred and people started becoming unemployed in a large amount, in a large number, and started having their homes foreclosed in large numbers, it got attention. Okay, it became an issue. But it's been galloping since then. The number of homeless people has been escalating and just off the charts. And the number of people in poverty, 150 million people in a country with 300 million people, half of them in poverty. Something is moving along in a direction that is... it's time to start screeching the brakes on when you have 1% owning 99% of all the wealth and the rest of us are starting to look into trash cans for food.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be careful with a few of those figures only because I don't know if it's actually 150 million in poverty. I know for sure that they talk about 1 in 6, you know.
1 in 6.
Real poverty, as in 50 million people are literally well below the poverty line, and probably many more who are so much scratching by and you know, day-to-day. You know, like the truckers who, you know, last week's port shutdown along the West Coast, many truckers saying, hey, one day's wage for me is my family's bread for the night. That's a $200 paycheck I'm not going to be getting, and that means a lot to me. So those guys aren't in poverty, but they're seriously living on margins of very thin ice in terms of what they can afford to lose. I think that coupled with that major crash, the inability of our government and our managers of this economy to come up with any remotely realistic solution or even the beginning of a solution, a jobs program, the fact that the Republicans and Democrats have been utterly incapable of reaching any agreement for the improvement of really harmed and injured Americans and lives that have pretty much been in many ways trashed in terms of savings, in terms of pensions, in terms of homes and everything people have worked their lives to build, the inability to meet that with any viable response is what I think is now this driving urge of this movement. This is outrageous that we have elected these people who have not only driven us into the ground but are incapable and refusing to even discuss a legitimate solution.
So what is causing that? I mean, one of the things that I hear from the Occupy movement is that, of course, it's to be expected if you have this much funding of political campaigns by corporations, and now that the gateway has been opened like crazy, the spigot's really been opened on the corporate money now because there was a Supreme Court decision saying, go ahead, corporations, you can pour all the billions you want into campaigns without anyone even knowing you're doing it. Where do you think this gridlock in the government is coming from? Do you think that has something to do with it?
Where is it coming from? I mean, it's certainly, yeah, the corporate personhood, I think you're seeing right now, and I think that's a big mountain to climb to begin sort of, you know, a lot of places. Los Angeles passed an ordinance. Other places have passed, I believe, Missoula, Montana, I just read. They're either considering or they're going to, and they're one of many. There are other places in California besides L.A. passing an ordinance to annul that Supreme Court ruling, to not treat corporations as people because they have allowed, they're treating them as people with none of the responsibilities or accountability or culpability of people. They give them free speech. These are not people, and yet they give them free speech, meaning they have the entitlement to spend their millions and billions on advertising and on buying of these politicians who then do their bidding. And so essentially, through this Supreme Court ruling, Citizens United, corporations have free reign. And they're
right. And if they actually were people, they'd be psychopathic. Right. I mean, that's that was something. It was really
that's
wonderful
a good,
movie.
A good description. Yeah, pathological, psychopathic. Using those words, totally criminal. And
incapable of being executed or given the death penalty for murder and crimes of that type. When individual people are, we're faced with undead, non-living entities masquerading as people.
Mm. And with our government and our entire election cycle and our whole political makeup in this country. This really so-called, democracy, this capitalist democracy, where really we're running around on this four-year cycle, waiting for the next election, as though anything will change in the next election. We just elected the best guy that we thought could have a chance to do anything. We elected him 3 years ago, and we've seen what 3 years of an Obama presidency looks like. It looks like impotence. It looks like a Republican leadership that is utterly determined at all costs to block anything he does. And a Democratic leadership that is unable to show muscle and actually use the majorities that they did have when he entered office to put in any remarkable changes into effect. So we're in this cycle where every 4 years we think an election matters, but really the corporations who, control everything.
That's right. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
They call the shots.
Yes. Yeah, and in fact, I will vote for whoever the Democrat is, especially when we're talking about Republicans. The Republicans have really kind of gone off the track. I mean, they have derailed as far as reason goes. I mean, we've got Newt Gingrich, who's one of the candidates, saying that he's going to drag judges before Congress if they make decisions he doesn't like. I mean, we're talking about severe dictatorship. We're talking about South American dictatorship with that.
Yeah,
and we're talking about...
The Republicans are not even... they shouldn't even be existing as a party. I mean, they're pretty defunct. I think they've really kind of expired, and this is sort of their bizarre last gasping breaths because they're so out of line with what any kind of mainstream American view is, and yet it hasn't, surprisingly, it hasn't pushed the Democrats, and that is why I think where Occupy comes in, not as a political movement, because there's no intention in the Occupy movement to join actual politics, but as a mover to force those Democrats who are in power, to force the people who are in legislative positions to do what the 99%, what we demand of them to do. So without actually entering the political process, it's this notion of it's time with this completely rabid, insane, and as you say, kind of psychopathic, you're talking about corporations, but I put the Republicans in the far-right Republicans in that line too. It's this idea of forcing them to shift.
And one of the areas where we see, and the thing about corporate personhood, because it's kind of like, someone could say corporate personhood, there's one, two, three, six, seven, at least eight syllables there. And so it might be too big for someone to put their arms around, but one of the comparisons that I make is like Wells Fargo with the private prisons. When you have somebody gets pulled over on a traffic stop, gets taken out of their car gets impounded, they get dragged into a holding tank on an immigration hold, they end up God knows where out in Arizona without any charges being brought to them. And it's feeding into a private prison system. This is the face. This is the face of corporate personhood. This is the face that a corporate person wears. You get to see it if that happens to you.
Yeah. They have, they're making a lot of money on every inmate that gets put into jail in our industrial prison.
They make a lot of money on pain
the Corrections Corporation of America, CCA, being one of them. I think they formed in 1984. We have a piece about it in our national edition of the Occupied Wall Street Journal.
Great piece of work. That is an amazing paper.
Yeah, but just a short, thank you, but just a very short sort of, what we're trying to do in the paper is to give people precisely what you're saying right now, these sort of short snapshots, just enough and really factual and sober and not some kind of a shouting, angry rag of a paper, but rather really trying to define, because I think this is precisely like what you're saying with prisons, and this is what Americans have not been getting told by their media, by our collective media, and what we deserve to know in a very factual base, and let us make the choices. These are out of line. Our college debt, that we're reaching $1 trillion in America in college debt, and that, the amount of private military contractors and hospitals, you know, healthcare, privatization of health insurance, these unjust policies guided by corporations, that it's due time that people both get informed and get out and act on that outrage.
So what are you, first of all, I want to let everyone know that this paper that Michael is referring to, and you are the editor of this paper too, correct?
I'm one of the editors.
One of the editors.
I definitely was a co-founder. I was in on the first issue, and you know, along with the publisher, and in every successive issue, we have now had five. We brought on a new editor, which has made it a really kind of embodying the spirit of the Occupy movement, which is a very consensus-based and very sort of, there isn't leadership, and yet we're all taking on leader roles with it. But
yes,
yeah, I definitely have helped, you know, steer it along with the others, and it's been really exciting.
Where can people find the Occupy Wall Street Journal?
So online, it is, that's at the moment the best place, because we raised a lot of money at the start. That was what helped us get it off the ground. We asked for $12,000 in donations, and we had a few people like Naomi Klein and Michael Moore helping to send it out to their sort of fundraising type constituent people, but it went far beyond sort of those names, and it got out to people, and in a week we raised $75,000, and this allowed us to produce four print runs of more than 100,000 copies in English, and several print runs of 20,000 copies in Spanish of an edition we translated.
That's excellent.
We're now less high on the money front, so until January we won't be having another issue. Hopefully we will. But in the meantime, online, it is www.occupied, past tense, occupiedmedia.us.
Occupiedmedia.us.
And in the meantime, we're also printing some of this national edition in different cities. We ran, I think, 50,000 copies in Houston to distribute through the South. And I think we just need to work
more
on getting a distribution network in the country going. And getting money, of course.
Yes, of course, of course. Well, yeah, and because it does take that to, especially something that's in the print media, and also having an adequate web presence. So it sounds like in that many thousands, they're actually being received, that you've got some distribution happening with that.
Yeah, and I mean, New York.
This thing's big, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
This thing's big, isn't it, this Occupy movement?
You know, from those of us who've been, I got there the second week. It started on September 17th, Saturday. I arrived on the 24th, 1 week later. You know, to be in it, I think, and now I'm in California. I'm back in the West County where I'm from. Really important in a way to retract, because I think to be in the middle of something like this, it's pretty overwhelming in a sense. Yes, it is big. It's so big in the sense of what it potentially can mean for America, that it's a little overwhelming, because it's been so long bottled up in a way, and now this fissure,
yes,
this sort of crack has opened, that people are actually talking, and that's all that it's about, this notion of participating, that's all, the only obligation that this movement makes,
yeah,
on individuals is that they participate, that we all feel like stakeholders,
yes,
in the movement, because we're coming out and reclaiming a sense of public space, getting together in public in the public commons, which is why authorities need to crack down on this movement, which has really helped to expand the movement. I mean, every time authorities have come out and tried to tear gas and beat with batons and arrest people, it's only grown the enthusiasm of this movement. But what we're really doing is not against the law. This is in our constitution to peaceably assemble. And I think the more people get wind of that, and this spring and summer coming up will be momentous time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, here's one of the questions that I want to have for you.
Sounds good.
And I'm talking to Michael Levitin, who is with the Occupy Wall Street out of New York and has been very active and is involved with a publication that has become very successful and widespread.
Oh, the time will come up when the winds will stop and the breeze will cease to be breathing, like the stillness in the wind before the hurricane begins, the hour that the ship comes in. And the sea will split and the ships will hit, and the sands on the shoreline will be shaking, and the tide will sound and the waves will pound, and the morning will be a breaking.
Yes. The hour when the ship comes in. What inspired that is that on the Occupied Wall Street paper, there's a reference to that song, and there's also a little quote from it. I think it was Cornel West had written one of the really famous social commentator, political commentator, Cornel West has an editorial in the Occupy Wall Street paper, and I think he quotes somewhere in there that song gets quoted. So
he doesn't actually quote it, but it's at the end of actually the article.
There we go.
My name's not on, but it's at the very end, last back corner of the paper. Then they'll raise their hands saying, "We'll meet all your demands," but they'll shout from the bow, "Your days are numbered." Dylan.
That was a good one, yes. And another one we do here is "A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall," which when we start getting toward environmental things, we very often have played that. So Bob Dylan, quite a prophetic almost kind of songwriter, because that song came out in 1964 during the Civil Rights era. So a shout out and kudos to Bob Dylan, of course. I'm talking to Michael Levitin with the Occupy Wall Street out of New York City, originally from Sonoma County, here in the coverage area of KBBF. And can you give us a little bit of some, whatever your crystal ball says about where things look like they're going to be ripe for action as we emerge from the winter into the spring?
Oh, boy. We got to get along. Winter's just starting, isn't it?
I know. Winter's just starting.
Back in California, you wouldn't even know it's starting.
I think today is actually the solstice.
Yeah. That's right. I'm going to a yard burning this evening, a solstice yard burning.
So yes, for all you pagans out there.
Tomorrow morning. Where is it going, you know? That's the question that obviously the media has been asking since the beginning, and it's sort of what the public would like to know clearly as well. I think that the idea that we have these months, this kind of a breather, really, in between the dramatic opening 8 or 10 weeks, really before the square in New York was closed down, before occupies across the country were shut down in this pretty much federally coordinated attack on the movement, it really kind of sent the movement into interior kind of operating mode, I think, earlier than people expected. And in a sense, a lot of people agree that was a good thing.
Yes.
Because a lot of energy was being expended in simply sustaining these hundreds of, you know, encampments around the country, and lots of issues that go with it, and food and homeless issues and many. This idea that now the winter is here, it's a time to reach people, and I think to consolidate the message and really figure out what the real message that Occupy wants to bring more Americans and more people who are receptive to this movement, which is a lot of people,
yes,
you know, to bring people in. And I think in ahead of spring and summer, which we'll be seeing many things and many varieties of actions and events, I think that the notion that we're going to be really reaching out, in, both in the media, which is why we consider our newspaper one element of that, but really all sorts of form. In the arts, people are already making films and finishing films from the movement. I think communicating and getting the issues kind of really concrete, because I think a lot of people don't yet. You can say you're against corporations and wealth inequality and let's rewrite some of this legislation, let's tax the rich. But the issues are so overwhelming that while many Americans have been receptive and intuitively understand and feel this outrage,
yes,
to feel like they can get behind it and join it and take ownership in it, and really, whether it means going out to the streets and marching or really getting involved in more community activities and just participating in smaller town hall style events where people try to work new policies into their own communities. I think it's this notion of participation. I also think that targeted campaigns like occupying foreclosed homes,
yes,
is really something that many people will respond to, because those are homes that people were kicked out of. They were cheated by banks and other financial institutions into, you know, getting these mortgages that were completely unpayable and were swindle deals from the beginning.
Right from the beginning.
And the fact that millions of people are out of their homes, and it's a sense of justice and of accountability to help these people move back into their homes.
And
it's really a positive thing, and I think we'll see a lot more of that, as well
that
as
has
I think
been.
Boycotts and things like, you know, we saw the whole West Coast shut down its ports for a day, and then
yes,
it cost companies like Goldman Sachs $4 million. That might have not been the most effective way to lure the public to support the movement, but it's one more aspect.
That really hit home for me, because when you see the foreclosed homes, that foreclosure, that loan that was taken out, was then put on the open market, on the global market. Somebody made a lot of money, a ton of money off of that loan, repackaging it as if, though it were a AAA, a highly desirable security, and then sold it as a security and made a fortune on it. And that's the part when I see all of the PR start to dissolve from the big banks. That's one of the points where I see it dissolve, is when you start having these actions around the foreclosed homes. It's really something.
Because everybody recognizes really the fundamental injustice of it, right?
Yes. Someone made a fortune on that, and someone else got kicked out.
Literally gambling with people's life savings and their not only their pensions, not only their retirement and what they put in savings. You're actually gambling on their physical roof and throwing it up like a Monopoly piece. And when you know, and you're actually gambling against it, you're going to make money if the whole thing collapses, which is precisely what it did. Yeah, it's criminal.
Yes, and so we'll be seeing some more creative approaches rather than simply having the Occupy encampments. Not that there won't be any, but especially with spring coming, but some more creative and focused and more laser-like, let's say, approaches and marches and actions, and keep that in the eyes of the public and in the ears of the public.
Absolutely, and I think that the more young people, the more students, and the more people who find themselves a little bit freed up come the spring and summer, and particularly all those unemployed people out there. How
yes.
about that? People who don't have jobs locking them in.
That's
I
right.
I think that the idea of...
a lot of 99ers will be emerging in the spring.
A lot of 99ers, and thinking of Washington and the East Coast being a place for convergence throughout the spring and summer, and really bringing this issue not only to Wall Street, but really finally right back home to Washington, and seeing a lot of people come out this year. I think that's going to be something that we should all enjoy participating in.
Yes, I think so. It'll be really something and exciting to cover that too. So Michael Levitin, thank you very much for joining us here on Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio here on KBBF FM 89.1. You've given us a very concise and an experience-based view of what is happening out there, and I look forward to contacting you again and bringing you back on the air.
It's great, Daniel. Great that stations like this and really, I think, across the country, but really free public radio and in the bilingual also, that you're really taking this with the seriousness that it deserves and really covering it. It's wonderful. So thank you.
And enjoy that solstice celebration you're going to.
Okay.
All righty.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.